Yeah, on the Arden Trail. Road reports made by the Sirens.
House Committee on Education will come to order. Welcome, everyone. As you know, it's a short session, so there are a lot of things going on around the building. We have a couple of members that are presenting their bills in other committees right now, but they will be joining us shortly. We are going out of order from what's on the agenda today, I believe, and starting with House Bill 4150. And so I would invite up Representative Peter Buckley, Karen Connolly, and David Wilkinson, please. Oh, and I'm also going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 4150. And Richard, would you do
sure.
a quick presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, or Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4120 revises the assessment and grading system standards for school districts relating to proficiency education. The committee first considered and the legislature first passed legislation relating to this topic in 2011 under House Bill 2220. And the interim committee considered this topic in a presentation by Representative Buckley during this past these past legislative days in November. Thank you.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Peter Buckley, representing Ashland and South Jackson County in the legislature, thank you for your time and consideration today. And for the members of this committee who are also on the Committee for Higher Education, my apologies for inflicting testimony on you twice in one day. And I know it's a hardship, but I just appreciate your consideration. House Bill 4150, as I mentioned to this committee during lunch days, is intended to make sense of what we thought was a very simple bill that passed in 2011, House Bill 2220. The page and a half bill that we passed in 2011 was interpreted in a wide variety of ways, unfortunately, and caused a great deal of confusion amongst districts. This is an attempt to help clarify and hopefully streamline, simplify where the 2220 rules ended up with districts believing they couldn't ask their students to do homework or that they had to create an incredibly complex task for their administrators and teachers to come up with a grading system, which was never the intention of 2220. I want to get very, very clear on that. What this bill does try to do is it does try to complete a process of determining what mastery is or proficiency is in basic subjects, but make it very clear this is not a mandate for proficiency-based education on any school district in the state of Oregon. And, Madam Chair, with your indulgence, I'll just repeat that for the record. This is not a mandate for proficiency-based education for any school district in the state of Oregon. This is an attempt to, for the districts that are moving forward well, with proficiency-based work. This was intended to be a tool for them to use. And I do want to make it clear, just as part of the opening remarks here, that the intent behind this bill is to be an inclusive process so that teachers who are the people who are on the front line, who are responsible for providing education and working with their students, have a voice in how these issues are discussed and determined on the district level. So in a nutshell, Madam Chair, that's what I'm trying to accomplish. Simplify it, make sure it's inclusive, and make it workable for every school district of the state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Please welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for giving me the chance to speak to you today. My name is Karen Connolly, and I'm a high school social studies teacher at Roberts High School here in Salem, the structured learning center where the expelled students from Salem-Keizer go. I am in my 19th year of teaching and have been using proficiency-based grading in several of my classes for approximately a year and a half. And so I'm here to speak to you today on behalf of House Bill 4150 and the changes that it would make. The transition to proficiency-based grading began about 2 years ago for me. After attending a training at the end of the 2012 school year, I decided that I wanted to pursue proficiency grading. It was my choice to do so. It has been one of the greatest challenges for me, but also very rewarding. I have the great fortune of working with an instructional coach to help me design assessments and rubrics for each standard I am assessing. I would not be as far along in this process as I am without her help. Other than access to time with my instructional coach assigned in my building, there has been really no resources or guidance or training provided by my district in proficiency grading. I'm lucky that I have this resource because many of my colleagues in other buildings do not. Salem-Keizer has decided that in order for students to meet what they perceive as the requirements for House Bill 2220, that we will have spring parent conferences the week before spring break and report the progress of our students during the first 6 weeks of the semester on at least two standards for each course we teach. For me, that will be four classes, so I have to design rubrics for eight standards. We were informed of this decision on January 15th. When all of the schools were dismissed, they dismissed the high school students early that day for building level meetings. This was 1 week before final exams were to begin for a first semester. So as you can imagine, my mind and those of my colleagues was around writing finals, finishing up grading. It wasn't around designing rubrics and proficiency-based grading for second semester. We were given about 2.5 hours that day of an introduction and some work time. And now we are required to put in 4 hours after our work day by the beginning of March. Each high school has some trainings available for their staff, but the reality is what is being provided doesn't meet the needs of many people. I'm especially concerned about my colleagues who have not had any training or any time to think about proficiency-based grading. It's really a new way of thinking for them. On March 19th, we will have 12 hours of parent conferences in which we are to report the status of our students' progress towards meeting the standards we have selected. The reality is that most high schools don't do spring conferences because the turnout is so low, and in return, we will be losing 2 days of instruction. Until yesterday, I didn't even know our district had a framework or any guidance documents around proficiency-based grading, and neither did my instructional coach. The requirements imposed by the district have greatly added to my workload and that of my colleagues. I do not believe this was the intention of the law. Keep in mind, I was already doing this in several of my courses. We have essentially been forced to move towards proficiency grading. The confusion around House Bill 2220 has led to these unintended consequences. In addition to my role as an educator, I also serve as the Region 2 Vice President for the Oregon Education Association, which provides me with the opportunity to travel around the state. And I'm hearing many of the same stories from my colleagues. It honestly seems like there are as many interpretations of this law as there are school districts. House Bill 4150 would help clarify the confusion and provide teachers with input in designing the system adopted by the district. Proficiency grading is where education is moving, and I support that move. But in this time of budget cuts, huge class sizes, implementing Common Core standards and SBAC, the rollout of new student information system called Synergy, new teacher evaluation systems, including student learning goals, the last thing teachers need is another mandate that they have no voice in. House Bill 2220 was passed with the best of intentions, but the confusion and unintended consequences it created have added to the stress level of educators around the state. Districts are attempting to meet what they perceive as the requirements of the law without the input of the very people they are asking to have the conversations with parents. House Bill 4150 would provide the necessary clarity while still allowing those of us interested in pursuing proficiency grading to do so. It will also give educators a voice in how it is implemented. Again, Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak with you today and considering this bill.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is David Wilkinson. I'm an English teacher from Westview High School in Beaverton, and I appreciate the opportunity to address you today in support of House Bill 4150. As I have little time to speak with you, I intend to leave some business cards and invite you to contact me anytime you'd like to hear the perspective of a classroom teacher. Email is by far the best way to reach me, and while we're talking about that business card, I'd like to point out the well-intended but rather farcical slogan on it. It says, "Making the impossible possible." Though we know this is an oxymoronic statement and is, to be clear, impossible, the fact someone actually printed it on our business cards illustrates how the impossible really is expected of public educators. In this politicized environment, educators are sometimes seen as ineffective when we are unable to deliver the impossible. Though I wish we teachers could be all things to all people, we can't. And some of the errors House Bill 4150 seeks to fix illustrate this. As it now stands, and though it was by no means the intention of the author of HB 2220, there are important terms left somewhat undefined in our current law, the most important of them being the very word proficiency. Were you to ask 8 people in this or any other room what proficiency means, you'll likely receive at least 6 different answers. House Bill 4150 seeks to resolve this. House Bill 4150 also sets up at least the beginnings of a dialogue where teachers, the people who actually have to make the system function, are given some opportunity to contribute to the process. My hope is we'll all have the chance to talk about what is possible and what has proven most beneficial to our students. I'd like to give you a couple concrete illustrations of what assessment and reporting looks like from a teacher's perspective. One of the commonly discussed tenets of proficiency is providing students multiple opportunities to demonstrate their skills. This is a noble idea, clearly beneficial to students, and sometimes fitting with practicality. However, there are also times where well-intended policy collides with reality. I currently teach 184 students, three sections of freshman and two sections of advanced placement English language. When I collect essays from all 184 of my students and I compromise and spend an inadequate 10 minutes grading and entering scores for each essay, that's 1,840 minutes or over 30 hours of work. This is somehow supposed to happen beyond my workday, where the bulk of my time is spent face-to-face with students. If multiple opportunities are provided to students, this extra 30 hours has to magically appear multiple times. This is where we start to see how well-intended law begins to codify the impossible. Another very tangible challenge many of us face is a lack of functional software to support this work. Though on the surface it seems simple enough, most education software was not designed to record or calculate grades based on proficiency. In addition to other substantive changes we face, many districts have migrated to a software called Synergy, as it was seen as the best fit we could find and afford. In short, the system would probably be more aptly called lethargy, as it is slow, cumbersome, and proving more an obstacle to our proficiency efforts than an aid. I wish to publicly thank my colleagues, the parents, and most importantly, our children for their gracious patience as we navigate through this challenge. As a teacher, a parent of young children in our system, and a citizen of Oregon, I urge you to pass House Bill 4150 to help educators bring a modicum of reality to at least part of the unfunded mandates our teachers and children currently face. We may not be able to make the impossible possible, but perhaps we can continue a productive dialogue about what is. Thank you.
Well, and if I might add, in OLIS today, I shared a syllabus that one of my kids brought home yesterday. It's the beginning of the new semester that points to this. And I know everyone doesn't have access to OLIS, but it talks about House Bill 2220 in two parts. The first says, Oregon House Bill 2220 requires student grades to be calculated from summative assessments. Examples include tests, labs, speeches, projects, and other measures of student learning. Coursework intended as practice for learning may be assigned and recorded in Pinnacle with a 0% weighting. Examples include in-class assignments, homework, participation, and other learning activities. There will no longer be opportunities for extra credit to boost your grade. Then it goes on to explain why they won't do that, and then it goes on in the next part. Oregon House Bill 2220 requires that students have more than one opportunity to demonstrate proficiency in a given standard. The highest grade that a student can achieve on a retaken standard is 75%. So I'm relatively confident that none of those things were anywhere in House Bill 2220.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
They were not, and I'll never try to do a good thing again, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel?
Madam Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you for coming to testify and giving us your testimony today. The teachers, can you tell me, you think you're speaking for all the teachers and all of them have, you know, they like what's happened or they think there's too much or, we appreciate you, we're hearing from you, but we're asking you to say, you know, is this one school, one classroom, or is it across the board?
As I travel around the state, I attend a lot of meetings with teachers from the Eugene-Springfield area, North Coast, all over, and almost every time we talk about House Bill 2220 and the frustration level. My colleagues in my own building, not all of them have been doing proficiency-based grading, and so suddenly now they're faced with it, and they've had little to no training. So I do believe I'm sharing the story of many of my colleagues from around the state. I think in some school districts that have taken the time to really study it and put something in place, they're good and they're on track. But for those of us, or for those that haven't begun this journey, it's quite daunting.
I would say that, frankly, many aspects of what I do as an educator are not changing. I have taught English for some time. I assess kids' ability to read and write as I am an English teacher and report back to those students and to their parents how they are doing and determine and record grades. So on some levels, what we're doing is not that radically different than what we've done at the in the past. And at the same time, when you go through, for example, the example given about multiple opportunities and some of those other decisions that are essentially made for us externally, whether they really make sense or pertain to the needs of that kid or the needs of that class, et cetera, or not, when those kinds of outside templates are just sort of blocked onto what we do, it becomes very, very cumbersome. And so what I hear from my colleagues is a lack of participation in the process. They're frustrated by the fact that this has become so solidified and codified, yet they don't feel that they had much input as professionals to speak to what they could do or couldn't do or why we were doing it. And I can say there is a fair amount of support. We've been talking about this and messing around with it in various ways for a long time, and a lot of colleagues like Karen have been doing this for some time, myself included. I've always just figured out how to make it work in whatever software we had, et cetera. But as more and more of these kind of external, and I would call them unfunded mandates, get put on us, and not enough time, and frankly, in many cases, no time is provided to try to make those transitions, the very thing we're trying to accomplish is completely undermined. The whole goal of this is to very accurately communicate with kids and parents where their kids stand. And by coming in and messing with some of this stuff, and again, not intentionally, not maliciously, but there have been many unintended consequences which cause, frankly, far more confusion about how a child is doing than there would have been in our pre-existing systems. So yes, my colleagues are by and large frustrated with the lack of input, the pace where this is going, and are very hopeful we can get to a place where we can get back to what we believe we can do very well, which is teach, assess, and report the progress of our kids.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. I had a couple of questions when I started reviewing the bill. I think those have been answered. I still have maybe one or two additional questions, if I may. And I want to make sure, Representative Buckley, did I hear you say that proficiency testing is not required?
Madam Chair, Representative Reardon, that's correct. House Bill 2220 did not mandate. House Bill 4150 does not mandate and clarifies there is no mandate for proficiency-based grading in any district in the state of Oregon.
Good. Thank you. May I continue?
Yes, please continue.
And I was very happy to see that we really does not require yet another committee. It can be an existing committee that serves the purpose, so that was good news. Could one of you talk to me a little bit about the number of standards that are required, and it says no more than three, and I'd just like to hear your perspective on that. I'm concerned about the there's huge numbers of standards out there, and how much time that you have to do things and how much information parents or the children might need, and how do you achieve that balance? Is three the right number? And
do you want to go first?
I can take a stab at that.
Okay.
First of all, I very much appreciate the question. I can tell you that varies very drastically across districts. And just to give you a couple examples, I'm a high school teacher. When I look at the freshmen that I teach, there are 11 primary targets that I'm to teach to. And these are very broad categories: reading comprehension, writing an argumentative essay, analyzing author's craft, that kind of thing. So in the course of a school year, I have those 11 major targets I have to hit, plus some of the sub-targets that go with them. But my grades in our system are determined by, they are tied very directly to those 11 things. So as the chair illustrated with her example, that means quote-unquote extra credit and things like that don't impact grades anymore. And I believe that is a very sound practice. Were I an elementary school teacher, on the other hand, where I teach kids all subjects, with maybe the exception of music and PE, depending on where I am, I suddenly have a pile of targets that I am supposed to hit, somehow accurately assess with every kid, and report on. And I marvel at my own children's teachers' ability to do a pretty darn sound job with much of that, and at the same time, I can't really see how it is sustainable, or at times I will look at some of that and go, I wonder how is it truly possible that they were really able to assess, or are they having to make, you know, an educated guesstimate? So both as a teacher and as a parent, part of what the problem that I see in blanketly mandating a number of things that will be hit, if we know we are, frankly, setting up a teacher up for failure in trying to hit too many things, and in so doing, setting up our children for failure by trying to cover too many things in too fast a time, we're undermining the very thing I think everyone in this room is trying to accomplish.
Right. I will say, this weekend I was at a meeting and we were talking about this bill, and I had a colleague who teaches 5th and 6th grade, and she has an 8-page report card to fill out. So for her, when she saw 3, she was ecstatic that she was only going to maybe have to report on 3 reading, 3 math, and so on. For me at the high school level, I've chosen 2 standards per unit approximately, so I'm doing about 6 standards over the semester, and for me that feels like a good number, and that's been the minimum number that I've been told I have to do.
And I was just wondering really why, if we set up a committee, why the committee wouldn't determine what that number is. It's going to be, you know, more than 1 but less than 250,000. So that would be my question. I still have that question based on actually what you said. So one more?
A follow-up?
Okay,
yep.
A little bit further down on page 2, line 37, it says, a student has not met or exceeded all the academic content standards, the school district shall make additional services or alternative educational or public school options available to the student. That sounds like, you know, we'll give them more, you know, additional help as required.
Person of reading, that's not actually proposed in the bill. That's existing law.
That's existing language.
That's existing law. That's not a change in this bill.
Okay. Thank you. Well, maybe it will be next session.
All right.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Do you have
that.
Further questions about
nope,
the changes in this bill?
That's it.
Okay. Thank you.
For the bulletin.
All right. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brett Buckley, I know you have nothing else to do. You're not busy at all. Did you have a chance, and I don't really want to get into the weeds in this. Are we going to have a little breathing time to have dialogue before we have a work session on this?
We'll take a 5-minute stretch break and then come back and vote.
Okay.
We won't move this till next week.
Okay. So we can talk offline. I sent an email with some concerns from Central Oregon superintendents, and I didn't know if you'd had a chance to, you know, go through the email with their questions and suggestions, and so.
Madam Chair, Representative Huffman, I saw the email. I glanced at it. I haven't had time to go through it. Particularly the suggestions about particular sections of the bill and what would happen if we remove particular sections, but I will go through that as soon as I can.
You were busy working on my other list of stuff, I know, so. but thank you.
Further questions of this panel? Nope, see, and then last chance. Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
All right.
Thank you very much.
So next we've got Representative Johnson, and are you coming with Jim Schlechter and Dan Goldman? Yeah?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members. Great to see you. For the record, Mark Johnson, State Representative for House District 52. I'm here today in, I think, a bit of an odd posture in that I am a co-sponsor of the bill, but I'm here to urge you to make some modifications to the bill as it currently exists. Let me just kind of run through my experience with the content and how we got here. But I think there's been no secret to those of us who are involved in the K-12 education about some of the confusion that's ensued with the implementation of House Bill 2220. I know I've heard about it from teachers in my school district. I've had a chance in November to attend the OSBA annual conference in Portland, and the Department of Ed had a work session or a little work group on that topic expressly, and the room was packed. This was, I think, the most popular place to be on that, was it Friday morning, I guess, because across the state there's been just been a lot of confusion about how to implement, what's necessary, what's not necessary, and so forth. And it came away, I think most members came away from that work session there at the OSBA even more confused. I think the questions were not answered. It was clear that there was a confusion continued to reign. So at that point in time, I've had a chance to work with my superintendent here, Dan Goldman, who sits next to me, and other superintendents, and think about just some common sense ways that the bill as it existed could be amended to just clarify what is necessary, what the districts have to do to provide the kind of reporting that the Department of Education is looking for to ensure. And really, I think the intent is all about how can we as a state become more clear about student performance, student proficiencies. How can we know that a student in Bandon is able to demonstrate the same kind of proficiencies as a student in Baker, so that as a state we can have a better handle for how we are doing across the state. I think this totally dovetails with what Common Core is about, trying to standardize proficiency, standardize outcomes, and obviously Oregon's not the only place in the country that is working with this and grappling with this. So in the ensuing weeks and so forth, I've had some conversations with Representative Gelser. I know back during LEDS days in November, I think maybe we talked, again maybe in January. I know Representative Buckley as well, and I got engaged in the process to try to help bring some clarity to this to these issues. So, having said that, House Bill 4150, I don't think gets there. I think there's still a room for too much confusion. I think there's room for too much miscommunication, and I think it really does. And to be perfectly honest with you, I think it takes a step backwards from where I think the state is trying to go, and I think nationally education is trying to get to being able to demonstrate common proficiencies that we know students can demonstrate that they have the ability to master, so that we can evaluate how we are doing as a state and as a country regarding our public education system. I have an amendment that I drafted. I don't know, is that available to
the members? Yeah, it's on OLIS, the dash one.
Thank you. It's the dash one amendments. And this specifically addresses a part of the bill, specifically in section 3, which calls for the creation of an advisory committee at the local level to provide input to the superintendent and boards regarding their grading systems. We have, I think, some good uses for advisory committees at local levels, and I think there's other times and perhaps it's not as well as advised. We, if you'll recall, have an advisory committee at each district now to help put together the achievement compacts that each district is responsible to submit to the Department of Education annually regarding their goals, their outcomes, how are we going to get there. And it's a great way, that I think, that shows how communication and collaboration can work well at the local level, because everybody can take ownership in what those goals and ambitions are. For this process regarding reporting of grades and outcomes of students, I think it's more problematic, because I think literally we could end up where we currently are, which we could have 196 different ways of reporting student outcomes and proficiencies based on what this advisory committee would come up with. In my opinion, this is a situation where I think the Department of Ed should take a very strong leadership role about saying what as a state is acceptable and how we're going to make this reporting available to parents, to the community, so that we can know for sure how each district is doing, how our state is doing, and where perhaps our weak spots are. So that's what I have for you, and with that, I'd be happy to pass off to one of these two gentlemen who happen to be in school districts that are in House District 52. So,
Madam Chair,
I'll answer any questions at any point.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
Just quickly, I think you are aware of the email that I was talking to Rep. Buckley about, the content. Does your dash one kind of address some of the concerns?
It does, and Representative Huffman, it does. I think Superintendent Wilkinson from Bend, I think, expressly agrees with the intent in the dash one amendments to alleviate some of their concerns, or concerns at least that he has, and I think the superintendent from Redmond echoed those same sentiments.
I would just add,
Madam Chair, too, I have had numerous conversations and voicemails from other superintendents who share some of the same concerns about where the bill currently is and where they would like to see it go. So I just add that as well.
And just to clarify, I don't think everyone in the room has had the ability to see the
those
emails, so they might not know.
Madam Chair, that's my understanding. That was forwarded on to the committee.
Oh, is that in OLIS?
I believe so.
But in terms of the Dash 1 amendment, what it does, the only thing it changes in the bill, it removes
just
the advisory committee.
Exactly.
But it doesn't make changes around the standards or anything.
Does not.
Okay.
Just removes the language pertaining to the advisory committee at the local level.
Madam Chair, I think it's Superintendent Ron Wilkinson.
There should be one from Redmond, I believe, as well, and there could be another third. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you. Welcome.
All right. Thank you, and good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dan Goldman, and I'm the superintendent in Hood River County School District, and I come before you today to implore that the committee reject multiple aspects of House Bill 4051. The bill is being introduced as a fix, really, to House Bill 2220, as we've heard, which passed in the 2011 legislative session, and while I don't argue that the bill was confusing legislation, and I don't argue that our State Department failed, really, in preparing school districts to implement it appropriately, House Bill 4051 really does make a bad bill worse, in my opinion. The intent, I believe, of the bill, of House Bill 2220, was to provide more clarity to parents about their children's progress towards adopted academic content standards throughout the state of Oregon. And not only does 4051 confound the original intent, I believe, of House Bill 2220 by including non-academic behaviors in the annual report to parents, it also adds complexity, and it's legislatively establishes a forced annual advisory committee at the local level. Before becoming the superintendent in Hood River County, I was the director of curriculum and instruction in Tigard-Tualatin School District, where I engaged teachers in all aspects of instructional reform and all aspects of instructional activities related to legislation that came down and to other local priorities. I'm aware of only a small number of school districts in the entire state where grading practices were actually forced upon teachers without teachers themselves collaboratively working together to establish what this bill will now require on an annual basis through a forced advisory with no funding attached to pay for the subcommittees or extra hours required to carry it out. So I echo the unfunded mandate conversation that was happening before we got up here. House Bill 4051, as proposed, puts what I say is it puts lipstick on the pig, really, of House Bill 2220. It does nothing to further the efforts to reform education to meet the governor's 40-40-20 goal. It adds another bureaucratic layer to making decisions that positively impact student learning. And it's unsupported by many, many, many superintendents across the state. Matter of fact, after calling superintendents in David Douglas, Gresham Barlow, Ben Lapine, Tigard-Tualatin, Sisters, Centennial School District, and many others, I can't find one superintendent that supports this bill. I can't find one. Specifically, I urge the committee to reject Section 3 of this bill in its entirety. The section requires in perpetuity a forced advisory meeting to accomplish what most every school district already does, work with our teachers to further best practice. If one or two districts have been too aggressive in implementing House Bill 2220 without collaboration with teachers, there are ways to deal with those issues locally that don't require legislative action. I further urge the committee to reject the inclusion of non-academic behaviors in the annual report of progress to the state-adopted content standards. This totally dilutes the intent of House Bill 2220 and will force a major step backwards through the state to reform efforts to inform parents and other stakeholders on the progress of our youth. So that's all I have for you today, Madam Chair, and I'll welcome any questions.
So I had a question about that one. In terms of the intent of House Bill 2220, there were two sponsors of that bill, Representative Buckley and myself, and I can say with 100% certainty that when I signed on to that bill, it never occurred to me that the result of that bill would be not grading homework, not having extra credit, or mandating to school districts how they needed to do their grading. Yep. That was never discussed in the committee. I've gone back and re-listened to those hearings over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. So the spirit, the context, and the intent of House Bill 2220, as laid out in all of those hearings and the way that we understood it at the time, was to allow credit to be offered to kids that demonstrated proficiency even if they had the seat time. Mm-hmm. So given all of that, and that Representative Buckley was just here, how does this clarifying that we didn't tell districts how they do their grades and putting it back to districts by not mandating to, that's what House Bill 4150 says, is the legislature is not mandating to you how you grade. You may use behaviors or you may not. It's entirely up to your district and your district leadership.
Sure.
how is that violating the intent and the spirit of the bill that I sponsored that never intended to talk about behavior?
I gotcha, right? So what I would say is that I don't think that the intent of House Bill 2220 is being carried out right now very well throughout the state of Oregon. So I don't believe that that bill is a great, you know, the way it's being carried out has been done very well. And I do, even in my statement here that I just read, I lay the blame at the State Department for not giving us adequate guidance or time. Many school districts really, I mean, if you aren't paying attention to what's going on here every single day, and we also have school districts to run, right? We didn't know that this bill didn't even existed until 2012, halfway through. And so a lot of the experience that I'm hearing our teachers, some of our teachers have is, we've got this new thing and we got to get this thing done right away. So the intent, I believe, of the bill, if and you can clarify it for me, right, is that parents know where their kids are compared to the academic content standards, right? And so if I give you a tissue box and I get extra credit for bringing that in, is that really telling you where you are in the academic content standards? And so what I'm hopeful that will happen in any bill revision is that we don't put back into this annual report, which is different than grading. This is not a bill that says you must grade people a certain way, which also I don't think was the intent of how.
But depending on the district you ask, and depending on the kids who've just gotten their first semester grades, who have been A and B kids that mm-hmm. are now walking home this week with their D grades, because not because of the Kleenex box, mm-hmm. but because their report didn't count or their presentation to the class didn't count, or because they couldn't remake up the test. They were sick the first day they took it, but somebody said they can never get more than 75% on the right. on the test.
So there, in my estimation, there's nothing in House Bill 2220 or in this bill that says you must do proficiency grading. Right. So some districts are doing proficiency grading. In Tiger Tualatin, we weren't doing proficiency grading. And House Bill 2220 wasn't going to make us do it. In Hood River School District, we don't do proficiency grading. And I don't believe that this bill will make us do proficiency grading. So in that school district where people are coming home with those grades, that's a school district that's choosing on their own to do proficiency grading. That's not about this bill. This bill is a once annual report of progress. Right. That's not every quarter. It's once a year. You got to tell parents where their kids are. That's different than your report card. And so those two things right now, and I still don't think this solves it, those two things get mushed together, grading versus an annual report around the academic content standards. And so I think there's other ways to get at it than going this way to get at that issue. And I think this this does not clarify that, does not clarify for that district that you just mentioned, right, for those kids that just came home. This bill does not clarify how that would be different, because it's not a grading bill and it's not a bill about proficiency grading.
Were there other folks that had questions before we move on to the next person? Sorry, I jumped in.
No, you're good. That's fine. It's your committee.
There you go. Other questions?
Show us that gavel, Madam Chair.
There it is. Hello. Please, welcome.
Well, good afternoon, Chair Gelzer, and I'm Jim Schlocker, Superintendent of Gresham Bartow School District in East Multnomah County, and Representative Gorsuch is certainly, I'm in his district, and I don't see Representative Fagan, but would be connected there as well. I come to you much like Superintendent Goldman after having numerous conversations with my colleagues around the state, probably the most extensive being with Don Grotting this morning in David Douglas School District. And I don't want to repeat necessarily what has already been said, but I want to highlight a couple of things. First of all, at the risk of being redundant, the current legislation nor the previous mandated proficiency learning. Proficiency learning is a direction that most districts are going, and when correctly implemented, is effective in both instruction and monitoring students. But given that that's not the intent of the bill, then I think any testimony or comment about the impact of proficiency learning misses the point. The point of the bill is accurate reporting to parents, and I think that still continues to be, from our role as district leaders, how we are intending to implement 2220. And with that in mind, the immediate implementation of 4150 would cause some issues in terms of what we are already working on in terms of the first year implementation. Mm-hmm. I would also comment that the first year of implementing pretty much anything is challenging. And so until we've had the opportunity to implement the current legislation, it's difficult to identify what the real issues are. Because right now we have mid-year interpretation of where the problems are. But until you see through one cycle, I think it's difficult to understand how this really plays out. So the speed of the change is disconcerting, I think, as a school leader. The second thing I would like to talk a little bit about is are some specifics, since that wasn't covered there. As I looked through the bill and talked with others about it, the first area is that issue between mixing of behavior and academic. So let me give you a quick example of why districts are moving to proficiency as a direction to go, not as a legislative mandate. The example would be a student, let's say at high school, who is running a mile. And that is certainly something that is, if he is proficient or she is proficient, you run it in a certain amount of time, they have been successful. But let's suppose there was also an associated log that was supposed to be turned in as a part of some homework, and that log, for whatever reason, got lost or disappeared. And so now the student is judged to have failed or fallen short, when in fact what the parent and the student need to know, are you proficient at running the mile? Now, whether you agree or not that that should be there, that's really what schools and school districts do. They work on how do we report, how do we communicate that information, and why is proficiency needed. Where it runs into trouble in this legislation is it goes backwards in saying may, and it leaves it wide open to where we'll have 196 or 97 interpretations of how to report to parents. Do we have behavior included? Do we not have behavior included? How do we weight it? And again, some direction from OD would have been helpful. A second area, and if you would permit, I would pass around a copy of something, if that's okay. It's an elementary report card. Proficiency or reporting to standards is very common in many elementary schools. It's also common in some middle and high schools. This is an existing report card for an elementary student in our district. When you look at that, you will see in each subject area, for example, in reading, there are multiple standards that need to be met. My question in regards to this one, which puts no more than three indicators, would be, if your child was in this classroom, which of those three reading indicators would you want to hear about? My guess as a parent, you would like to hear about all of them, since that's how the student is being assessed and monitored and instructed as they move along. Report cards are about giving information that's helpful to the instructor to change instruction, as well as giving parent good information. To legislate no more than three indicators would force current practice in many of our schools to be reduced to reporting less to parents as opposed to what is currently in practice. The last piece that I would like to address has to do with the Section 3. I respect that the writers of the legislation were seeking to make sure that there is broad-based stakeholder involvement in these pieces, but I think to write legislation that requires a board advisory is a different conversation. An advisory to the board carries with it certainly a different expectation than you would if you had a committee within a district. Let's say if I wanted to pull together a group of teachers, which we do, to talk about this subject. That's a different standard than if it's a board advisory. A board advisory is a public meeting. It requires minutes, and you have to schedule, you have to post the agenda. And while that's good on some topics of great public interest, when you're trying to implement something, whether it's proficiency learning or something else, that will certainly slow a process and really open it up to really more of a negotiation than committee work. And my concern also is, to me, it is a little confusing that the role of an advisory, at least as it relates to a school board, is not an action job. It's primarily an advising, to collect information and give advice. And yet when I look at the language of this bill, it calls in the beginning of it that is the job of the advisory is both development and implementation. Implementation is a management responsibility. That's an administrative job, not an advisory board's job. Also, and it talks a little bit about an advisory that makes recommendations to the superintendent. I'm confused by what is intended here. An advisory to the board advises the board, not makes recommendations to the superintendent. The board could make recommendations to the superintendent based upon the advice that they receive from the committee, but for the advisory to have a direct link to a superintendent, and then is the superintendent required to accept that advice, or do we wait until the rules for this legislation are written and the interpretation of the rule writer says you are or you aren't? To me, there are many open doors here for possible misinterpretation and abuse. And in that sense, I believe that if, in fact, 2220 did not turn out the way it was supposed to, maybe an appropriate response is to repeal 2220, not add 4150 on top. And I would be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for your time.
Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I think we forgot to have Dan. You were going to speak to the Dash 4 amendment?
There's a deer in the headlights look.
I let you go before I let you finish your presentation. Sorry about that.
My name is David, and I didn't get those cards up to you, but I think you were referring to me. So.
Yes, sorry.
Okay, so quite all right. I will just speak very briefly to this, in that as I'm looking at the Dash 4 language now, in essence what it is asking to do is provide an opportunity for some conversation between the Department of Ed and the feds about implementation and perhaps funding of assessment that we are moving to. And I would just say that I think giving that some thought, and again, the ongoing discussion about unfunded mandates and time to make to implement things, I believe this is a good idea. So I just would leave it at that.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that is the Dash 4 amendment. Great. Next we've got Mark Thielman. And is there anybody else who has not yet signed up that wishes to speak on this bill? Mark, go ahead and start your presentation because we're almost out of time.
Well, mine will be very short because my colleagues ahead of me pretty much said everything I had on the list. I do represent a little bit different region than they were describing. Naturally, welcome. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Lots of drama. I just got off.
Can you start your name?
Mark Thielman. I already said the ALSEA School District, ALSEA. Coming off the COSA, we had a conference in Salishan, and I think everything that I was concerned about has been covered in terms of why I think this is probably not the best fix for something that's created a tremendous amount of I would like to call it gnashing of teeth. I started the school year off and in service with panicked staff who read in the paper about no homework and et cetera, similar to what you relayed, Rep. Gelser. And I responded by getting a copy of the bill and reading it. And then I said to my staff, I don't see anything in here that says we have to do all these things that the paper reported. So we're going to do what the bill says, not what we're being told by various agencies. And, of course, that started the superintendents telling us not to to follow the law. So then after about another 3 hours of conversation, we came to the conclusion that some teachers felt like they would be comfortable moving ahead with some proficiency things and others not. And so we've had a nice little micro experiment in our school district. And there's some very so in our freshman science class, we do proficiency grading in a similar way, I think, that is kind of outlined in this new fix with reporting to parents. So we really do a double grade system. And I think there's some value to it. But what I think the value is that it was owned by the teacher. These were implemented by the teachers. And they have the flavor of each teacher and each program. What I read and hear is a little disconcerting. It sets limits and also makes mandates and requirements. It's going to create another round of drama, which will be distracting, I think. Because I think proficiency grading, in terms of the culture, the one good thing that came out of the snafu is that it's got people talking, and I've seen some positive movement, but I think it needs to be a grassroots thing. The only other thing I wanted to clarify, so I don't beleaguer this, is I had some lobbyist folks after the meeting that you were at, Rep. Gelser, explaining to me, and I just wanted to make sure that this was clear with the committee because I'm still unclear about it. I talked to a colleague in Canby today who was privy directly to that conversation, and I he had more in depth, but what we're being advised by some of the lobbyist folks is that 2220 was not enforceable, it's not required, and that includes the reporting piece. And so that's out there in the rumor pool in the superintendent world. I wanted to bring that to the attention of the committee. That in and of itself is a problem, because if we're not doing an outright repeal here with 4150 and and we're making a fix to a bill that's not enforceable. That is a perception that's out there. So, ironically, is there any guidance on that? Is that something you guys are aware of? Because it's out there. Just FYI. All right?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for coming. Always nice to see you. So we also have, if you look in OLIS, there is also a dash three amendment. And the dash three amendment does two things related to when a student is leaving school. It clarifies that if a kid, they're going through, they're getting their high school credit, and they've been allowed to use accommodations to earn that credit, that when they do that alternate work sample to demonstrate their essential skills to graduate from high school, that they would be able to use that same accommodation as long as it doesn't lower the standard. And then it directs the department to come back and talk to us in January, now that we're a few years into the implementation of the essential skills, to look at what number of kids are not getting a diploma solely because they haven't met that essential skill test at the end. They have their credits, they have their grades, but they haven't met that, and any recommendations that the department might have around that issue and how students can demonstrate things and when they're ready to get a diploma. So if people have questions about that one, let me know. Anything else on this bill?
Testimony completed.
The testimony is completed, I believe. Is there anybody else that wants to be heard on House Bill 4150?
ODE is not going to testify.
ODE is not signed up on the list, no. Yes, and Richard wants to share some things to the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I just wanted to mention for the committee that we received a large volume of testimony about this, including what Representative Johnson alluded to, some testimony from Ben Lapine, Baker, Redmond School Districts, as well as some individuals who sent in some testimony, and that's all available on OLIS and
so
has
did
been.
You get sisters, right?
I'm not sure. I don't have that on my list, but I'm happy to check on that, Representative.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
Superintendent Goldman was, his comments were within the Redmond and Ben Lapine.
Thank you very much. So we will work this bill next week. We'll post it for Monday. We'll hopefully have all the refinements we need and be ready to go. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4150. Do we have Representative Smith-Warner? So we're going to stand at ease because we don't have members to vote and we don't have our member to present the next bill. So we will stand at ease until 2 o'clock.
And Madam Chair, did I say Superintendent?
representatives. All right, we are going to open up a hearing on House Bill 4090, and I would invite Barbara Smith Warner, Robin Johnson. No, sorry. Yes, Robin Johnson and Joyce Doherty. And yes, please say something.
Thank you.
And Darcy Miller.
Thank you, Representative Chair Gelser and members of the committee. House Bill 4090 allows the Department of Education to award grants to encourage participation in summer meals programs. In particular, the committee has been asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments, which make some textual changes and has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued. This measure is related to House Bill 2729 from 2013. Thank you.
Welcome.
Chair Gelser and members of the House Education Committee, for the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner. I am a state representative from House District 45, which covers Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. I testify today in support of House Bill 4090, which would increase the availability of summer meals in high-need districts by giving grants to local school districts and community groups to encourage greater participation in summer lunch and after-school meal programs. Summer food is a critical resource for families who rely on free and reduced-priced meals during the school year because hunger does not take the summers off. At Park Rose schools in my district, almost three-quarters of the students are eligible to participate in such meals, and all six schools in the Park Rose district currently qualify to have summer meals served. However, 2 years ago, they only had one site because the district couldn't afford to open any other sites. And then in 2012, they had three. Now, as a mom, I know firsthand how that hungry kids, they really can't focus. And this funding will help more sites to open, which means more kids will get more meals served closer to their homes. With the increased investment allocated in 2013, extending the opportunity for schools and nonprofit organizations to reach out to the community and increase participation in the summer and after-school programs will move us toward our shared goal that no child in Oregon goes hungry. Working together in partnership across Oregon for the health of our children, House Bill 4090 will move us significantly closer to meeting this critical goal. I strongly encourage your yes vote, and I appreciate your support of House Bill 4090. Thank you.
Welcome.
Chair Gelser and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joyce Doherty, and I am the Director of the Child Nutrition Programs. These programs are located within the Office of Learning, the Unit of Student Learning, in the Department of Education. With me, to my right, is Darcy Miller. Darcy is a Child Nutrition Specialist with the Oregon Child Nutrition Programs. The United States Department of Agriculture have guidelines and regulations for the at-risk after-school meal and snack program and the summer food service program. These regulations determine eligibility, reimbursement rate of meals, and menu patterns. For a meal or snack to be claimed for reimbursement by the local sponsor, that meal or snack must meet menu patterns and menu guidelines. You are familiar with the National School Lunch Program, or NSLP, which is designed to give students access to nutritious, affordable, and tasty lunches during the school day. When school is out and parents are still at work, children and adolescents often need a supervised place to be with their friends. The Summer Food Service Program and the After School At-Risk Meals and Snack Programs help fill that gap and make sure that children and adolescents can get the nutritious meals they need. The Summer Food Service Program is designed to feed children in low-income areas during the summer when school is not in session. The Oregon Department of Education Child Nutrition Program encourages school districts that currently operate the Summer Food Service Program to operate the program from the first day of the summer vacation to the last day of the summer vacation. In Oregon last year, there were 135 sponsors and 825 sites. After school, although school is out, hunger does not take a vacation. It does not take a break. And children often need nutritious meals. The After School At-Risk Meals and Snack Program is designed to serve meals and snacks to attract children and adolescents into an educational or into educational activities that are safe, fun, and filled with opportunities for learning. This program provides a nutritional boost to children and adolescents in low-income areas. There are currently 95 sponsors and 381 sites. The Oregon After School At-Risk Meals and Snack Program Start-Up Expansion Grant Funds are currently limited to a maximum of $10,000 per organization. We have found that this money is not enough to actually help sponsors expand student participation in the programs or to help new sponsors start up an after-school meals and snack program. The current guidelines limit how grantees can use the grant funds. In order for grantees to meet the goal of increasing participation and or expanding access for after-school meals and snack programs, more flexibility is required. House Bill 480 increases the maximum amount allowed for the after-school at-risk meals and snack program start-up expansion grant, increasing the grant funds from $10,000 to $20,000 per organization. This will help increase sponsor participation and thereby increase the numbers of students receiving nutritious meals after school and during the summer. House Bill 4090 will fund participant enrichment activities and materials, providing expanded learning opportunities. House Bill 4090 allows the Oregon Department of Education child nutrition programs to be more flexible in distributing additional startup funds to grant recipients and help ease the administrative workload for the Oregon Department of Education child nutrition programs and increase staff efficiencies. These amendments are at the suggestion of the department. They would allow sponsors to upgrade, purchase, and install needed equipment. Thank you for your time. We're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you.
You want to switch?
No, you're fine. Okay. Thank you. Chair Gelzer, members of the committee, my name is Robin Johnson. I'm the public policy manager for the Oregon Hunger Task Force. Thanks so much for the opportunity to testify today in support of House Bill 4090, including the Dash 1 amendments, which address the important issue of out-of-school time feeding programs. Last session, the legislature prioritized feeding children at risk of going hungry by again investing in startup grants for the after-school meal and snack program. Today, we're here to ask that you extend the grant program to allow sponsors of the summer food service program to also receive grants to feed more hungry children during the summer breaks. Additionally, as Joyce pointed out, the bill will also increase the grant, the allowable grant amount from $10,000 to $20,000. As you know, in Oregon, over half of all the students rely on free and reduced price meals during the school year. When the school day ends or lets out for break, those same children and their families may be struggling to find food. It's clear to me that this committee understands how critical good nutrition is to our children, that these programs are one way to provide it. We can ensure that Oregon students are well-nourished and ready to succeed in school and life. We've had tremendous success in increasing the availability of these programs and the number of children fed during the summer with small startup grants. In addition to the after-school grants, Partners for Hunger Free Oregon for several years has offered these grants to programs around the state. In 2013, through private funds, 22 new summer meal sites were started, and they served an additional 2,142 more children each day. These meals leveraged $225,000 in federal dollars returned to Oregon, and they created and they supported the creation of 28 new jobs through these meal sites. House Bill 4090 will help address childhood hunger, support our economy by ensuring that our children and youth are getting, and support our economy by assuring that our children and youth are getting nutritious food when school is out. On behalf of the Oregon Hunger Task Force, I respectfully ask for your support of this bill. Thank you so much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Representative Parrish?
Well, we, on behalf of Rep. Reardon and I think we'd like to thank our newest representative for carrying the water on this bill for us and testifying as two of the sponsors on the bill. So totally support that. Joyce, it's very good to see you.
Good to see you
again, and glad to have you in the building. I think I'm excited about this bill, and I'll just share the piece that I think these gals do great work. They work very hard for our kids and make sure they're fed. You know, the startup money is a really important piece. It doesn't matter if you come from a district like mine where you've got some dollars. Sometimes the pushback is that you have some dollars and we don't want to spend it on that. And so having that extra funding, I think, sometimes takes some of that burden of somebody who wants to champion a summer food program when they can say, yeah, but I have the money, so I'm just going to go ahead and do it. It is really important to have those dollars. And you know, when you think about needing refrigeration and you need, you know, coolers and serving space and, you know, towels and everything that you need to do to make lunch go, it's just it's so helpful and so critical that we make sure that these programs are fed. And you'd be surprised where there's pockets of hunger. And I know that Darla's worked, she worked with me trying to get, and Darcy, sorry, trying to get 10 years ago, trying to get a summer lunch program in Wilsonville. And I believe they still are doing that. And, you know, but it was a fight to get there, and it was just, so just really appreciate the work and glad to support this bill.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Representative Gorsuch.
To go back to your comment about the number of kids that are on free and reduced, did you say 50% of Oregon students?
It's Chair Gelser, members of the committee, Representative Gorsuch, it's a little bit more than 50%. So
across the state.
Across the state.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's just hard to believe, and it's so not okay. What year is this? It's 2014. And when I went, as you know, because we talked about this earlier, the 1914 stuff, because we're very old here. But
we're old enough to know.
We are. But in the time when I was a kid, growing up in the 60s and 70s, the concept that people would not have food for their children, that idea that, you know, that poverty was in the past, that was Depression-era stuff, and we were heading for a bright future. Where in the world did that go? It's outrageous. So anything we can do to support this and more, I would wholeheartedly support. Sorry, I got on my soapbox. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel?
Just,
oh, yes, please.
I was on school board in early 90s, and somebody brought up this crazy idea of summer or of breakfast programs for school kids, and I thought, wow, why do you need to do that? But we surveyed the neighbors, all the people in the district, and found out, indeed, there was a need. Now that same district is up to 80% or more on free and reduced lunch, so we're not doing any better. So thank you so much for bringing this to our attention, helping us help the communities.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you very much. And last, we have Tricia Smith.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, and I won't take up much of your time. I just wanted to put our very strong support for House Bill 4090 with the -1 amendment on the record. Our members are very concerned about how hungry their students are, and we know you can't teach them if they're hungry. And we also know that while they're hungry all summer long, they're not learning all summer long. And so we have to do a whole lot more teaching in the fall as a result. This bill can provide us all benefits that we can't even fathom at this moment. And so thank you very much for hearing it, and we hope you'll move it.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Tricia? Seeing none. Was there anybody else that wanted to be heard on this bill? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4090 and open a work session on House Bill 4090. Representative Springer, we've got a script because there's a lot to do with this.
Chair Gelser, I move to adopt the Nash 1 Amendment to House Bill 4090, dated February 4th, 2014.
Representative Springer moves to adopt the Nash 1 Amendments to House Bill 4090, dated February 4th, 2014. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Springer.
Chair Gelser, I move House Bill 4090 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
And we do have a letter from the Speaker, or permission from the Speaker to rescind. So Representative Springer moves House Bill 4090 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Yes.
I fully support this program, but why is the referral, if we're up, did we, I'll be honest, I have not read the bills. We're upping it from 10 to 20, so there will be a financial.
Richard can speak to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Wisnant. The fiscal impact statement from LFO says that it's a minimal fiscal impact because they're increasing the grant size but not the amount of money.
Thank you.
Any further discussion or questions? Seeing none, would you please call the roll, Debbie?
Representative Bagan?
Excused.
Representative Bumper?
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative Parrish?
Yes.
Representative Wisman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Reardon?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Yes.
Chair Gelson?
Aye. The motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the floor. Representative Smith Warner, would you carry this bill? Fantastic. Great first presentation, and again, welcome to the Oregon House. With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 4090. And we're now going to open a couple of other work sessions. Okay, we can do these really quickly. All right. So I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 4009. Richard, would you remind us which bill House Bill 4009 is?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 4009 relates to the funding of educational services to students admitted to pediatric nursing facilities. The committee considered it this past Monday.
Great. Colleagues, this is the Providence-Portland Public Schools bill. Representative Springer.
Chair Gelser, I move House Bill 4090 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Springer moves House Bill 4009 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there a discussion? Seeing none, is there objection to this bill? Representative Huffman?
No,
you're welcome to object.
Here, I'll do it for you.
Seriously, is there objection? Do we need to call the roll? Okay, great. Seeing
to Rep. Huffman.
There are many objections to Representative Huffman.
Objection. Thank you. I've had this problem with him all day.
But wait, if you respond now, I'll double your offer. You'll get two bills for the president.
I believe there was no objection to the bill, and as a result, the bill motion passes and the bill heads to Ways and Means. And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 4009 and open a work session on House Bill 4008. All right. And
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4008 revises the calculations of the state school fund and school improvement fund as it applies to fundings for programs for students in youth corrections education and juvenile detention programs. The committee heard this one on Monday as well.
Sure. Representative Springer.
Chair Gelser, I move House Bill 4008 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Springer moves House Bill 4008 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Gorsuch.
Simply what I said the other day, which is it's hard to believe that people would think you should retroactively go back to the beginning when you're in the middle of the school year. So I fully support moving this.
Thank you. Any other further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to this bill? Seeing none, so ordered, and the bill goes. The motion passes. Representative Springer, would you carry this bill?
Sure.
So Representative Springer will carry, and I will close the work session on House Bill 4008. So we are a couple of changes to the agendas are posted all the way out. We are the 4062, which we heard last week, the information technology bill. we're going to move that for a work session to next Wednesday, the last day that we'll meet. We'll post House Bill 4150 that we heard earlier today for a work session on Monday. And then Friday, we have the two OEIB bills and the interdistrict transfer bill. And the MASCOT bill is coming off of the agenda because the Senate is going to start the MASCOT
bill.
Very same
bill.
Representative Springer?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Any questions about...
Do you need to carry over that bill?
And I don't need to carry anything over, is that correct?
No.
Okay. Great. With that, House Committee on Ed is adjourned. Thank you.